Welcome to the Nature Reliance Podcast, where we explore the history and practical experience of the great outdoors and discover new ways to connect with nature. I'm Craig Cottle, your guide through the fascinating world of natural living and survival skills through experiential education and interviews. Today's episode is brought to you by the Nature Reliance School Online Membership, an immersive online learning experience designed for outdoor enthusiasts just like you. Are you passionate about the outdoors? Do you crave more knowledge about disaster readiness, wilderness survival, bushcraft, tracking, and nature awareness? If so, the Nature Reliance School Online Membership is your gateway to a community of like-minded individuals, all dedicated to learning and sharing essential outdoor skills. With the Nature Reliance School Online Membership, you get exclusive access to a wealth of resources, including expert-led tutorials, interactive webinars, and a library of engaging courses, downloadable books, and documents. Whether you're a beginner or an experienced outdoorsman, there's always something new to learn. So don't wait. Click on the link below to join the Nature Reliance School Online Membership today. Embrace the wilderness, enhance your skills, and become part of a community that values nature as much as you do. Now, let's dive into today's episode. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode. Hey, this is kind of like a double duo going on here in several different ways. First, another episode of Nature Reliance Media Podcast. So for those of you who are just listening in, we are also going to be adding these to our YouTube channel at Nature Reliance School. So go over there and watch some video there. We might have some things to share that are specific to video. You can check out that as well. But what are we calling this thing, man? Like dueling banjos or something? What do you think?
Dueling interviews? This is their first one, so.
Yeah, for those of you who are new to Nature Reliance Media Podcast that are seeing us here on YouTube, Tracy Trimble's here with me. We've had Tracy on several times on the YouTube channel, but it's not on a regular basis, but I think we're going to change that, aren't we?
That we hope to. We hope to.
So what we're going to be doing, guys and gals, is we're going to be doing some more, I don't know, campfire discussion, frank conversations between Tracy and myself, just hanging out, talking about things that relate to Nature Reliance School, things that we can do and say that'll help you grow in your outdoor experiences, stay safer, all that kind of good stuff. So we'll be moving forward with this as best we can. And we really, really, listen to me. Are you listening to me? We need you to give us some feedback. We want to do what you want us to do. Several people have joined us in on our Zoom classes. Tracy led a class on Cal Topo, which was how to get free topography maps. If you weren't in on that class, go to the website right now, naturereliance.org. You can sign up because we'll be doing that again. Tracy, I hadn't told you. I think we almost have another full class right now.
Ooh, we need to get that together then. I'm working on something dealing with Cal Topo now, probably in a couple weeks, maybe three, for me to get it all together that I think is going to be pretty good. It's going to be some real practical stuff, me out in the field recording and showing how to actually apply it while you're hiking.
Yeah, guys, that's something Tracy and I are working through. Hey, we've taken a hard right with Nature Reliance School. I keep saying that just because of the nature of what's going on. And, you know, we're going to utilize Zoom as best we can to get more information out there. A lot of it free, like we're doing right here. Some of it paid, like the classes are $5. Tracy did Cal Topo. Obviously, he's going to be doing more. I did one on situational awareness. I'm working on right now on summer tree identification. So that way we can get some of this information out to you in this format, and we can all learn from it as well. But today our intent is to, we got dueling interviews going on here. Tracy's got some questions for me. I kind of have a couple of hints what's going on. I've got some questions for Tracy. He's got a couple hints what's going on, but I want to stump him on a couple too. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, you probably will.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. I'm talking to you. You like this podcast, don't you? And you're thinking about doing a podcast yourself. Let me tell you how easy it is to do this with Anchor. First off, the money's right. It's free. Zero cost. Secondly, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will then distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and many more. Bonus, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
I guess we can get started. You want to get started on the questions?
Yeah, man. Throw one at me.
All right. Let me start you off easy. We've talked about this several times. What is your pet peeve within the outdoor teaching community or industry? What is your pet peeve?
That's a good question. Obviously, everybody does things differently, and I'm pretty open to people doing things differently. And I do things in a way that I don't expect everybody else to like the way I do it, or we do it, or you do it. But there are some things that really bother me. And the big one as far as a pet peeve would be the people whose poop don't stink kind of thing. The people that are just so into themselves that think that they're the only one that have ever done these particular skills and that their way is the only way. I mean, that truly is a pet peeve of mine. We were actually, Tracy and I, for those that are watching and listening, Tracy and I were chatting briefly about this in regards to another subject entirely. But, you know, Doug Meyer, who's been a mentor of mine, primitive skills instructor, as well as for Tracy too, he said to me in times, man, these skills, there's nothing new really. We're just imitating what has happened before us. And I like the attitude for our school that we know that we stand on the shoulders of giants that come before us, those that have done all these skills. And that doesn't mean that Tracy himself or I myself don't add a flavor to it that helps get it to other people. I think that's the key, is we as instructors have a particular ability that we do things in a way that resound with others, but the skills themselves and pretending that your way or my way is the only way is, yeah, that's ridiculous.
I agree. I would add this. The one thing that irritates me the most is whenever instructors try to make clones of themselves.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of making individuals, right? One of the first things you and I, when did we meet? Like 2006, maybe something like that.
I think it would have been more. Yeah, it would probably been right in there.
Five or six. And then we kind of got Nature Reliance started. But one of the first conversations that you and I had outside of the realm of martial arts there, that how you and I met, was that I was looking into doing my carry conceal. And you may not remember this, but I said, Greg, what would you recommend? And you said, and you gave me your opinion. And then you followed that up by saying, but you got to figure out what's right for you. But I'm sure you don't remember that. And I thought, and you've carried that philosophy throughout Nature Reliance School all the time. Mm-hmm. I love this knife, but it may not be right for you. You have to figure out what's right for you. And you see too many instructors who say, you have to, this is the best pack. This is the best knife. This is the best, and it may be for them. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying they're lying, but you go back and teach, or Nature Reliance School teaches mindset, skill, tactics, and gear. That best knife may be because that individual has a totally different mindset or skill set or tactics, where someone new into the industry may not. So trying to create clones of themselves is a pet peeve of mine. And here's something that also that I always admired about you.
Dang, what are you doing, man? Trying to, you hitting on me or what?
Yeah, man. Bro crush, man. Is that you make mistakes. And you'll make them on video. Yeah, right. You do. I mean, because you're your normal person out there. And all these other people, whenever they put the videos out, everything is perfect.
Right.
And that irritates me to death because nothing is perfect. Nothing goes as planned out there. I was sitting in class one time taking a continuing education class for my profession. I'm a real estate appraiser. And the instructor was going through certain techniques on how to make adjustments, how to calculate them, figure them out, and apply them to the report. And I asked him, I said, do you care to do this with live data? Because it was all that textbook teaching, right? Everything is just perfect. And I said, you have internet access. Let's pull up our multiple listing service, MLS, and give you my working area and show me how you apply that in my area, because what you're showing up there does not work in my area. And he wouldn't do it. And I doubt if he could. Wow. You know?
Right.
So mistakes happen, and you're good with just, hey, you know, big deal. Here's a mistake. Let's start over and go from there.
I think it's, you know, I don't want to go too deep in this one subject unless we should. I don't know, up to you. But I think this is really important. What you just brought up is really important for those that are in this realm of learning through YouTube, simply because you might look at, let's say we look at Morse Kahansky, rest in peace, Morse. He did a lot of things, but most of what he did, fantastic instructor, one of the best known ever, beloved by many, is in a boreal forest. And I'm just telling you, some of the stuff that he did in a boreal forest is not going to work in Kentucky hardwoods. It's not going to work. Right. It's a different environment. The humidity is different. The wood is different. The leaf litter is different. The ground is different. The soil composition is different. I think for those of us when we're watching guys and gals that are on YouTube or going to a school like Nature Reliance School, is recognize the environment. You know, that's one of the reasons that the name is, surprise everybody, Nature Reliance School, because we all have to rely on the nature that's around us to be able to do these things, and understanding nature is invaluable to that.
Yeah, I agree. Anything else on that?
No,
Any other pet peeves that you got going on out there?
Let's move on. But yes, I have several. All right. I got a question for you.
All right.
What is the latest project you are working on at your homestead? It's been going on at the Trimble place.
From a personal standpoint or for the Nature Reliance School?
No, just from personal standpoint.
Oh, yesterday I removed five stumps. I'm clearing out. That's my big project right now, is I'm clearing out an area to install a raised garden. Now, we did a podcast on it, actually the last one, and I'm still working on it. My goal was by the end of July, have the area cleared and ready to start building. Probably not going to happen.
What's happening?
Just time. The last 4 weekends I've been gone on Saturdays, helping other people do some projects. So just haven't had the time, but I'm getting close. I'm probably 70-75% there of getting it cleared out and ready.
And removing stumps or backbreaking work, right?
It can be. I use a rope and come along to help pull, dig out. Now, some of the stumps, I jumped on one the other day. It was the biggest one that I've tried. It was a maple, and gosh, I dug and dug and dug and cut three of the big roots coming off of the root ball, put my come along on, pulled on, and it never budged. So I'm going to I'm just going to dig out around it and cut it off below the ground, drill some holes in it as deep as I can so that it'll rot over the next, you know, two to 4 years or something. I may put some stump removal in it or something like that, just to start the process.
What is that? Stump removal?
Yeah. You just drill holes, and it's a compound that you pour in it, and it will help the rotting process.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. I think one or two of, it's not really in my way from where I'm going to be building and laying out my initial portion of the garden. But there's one or two that's in my way, and I may bring them down, drill them out, and burn them out or something to just get them out of the way, because they're too big to pull by hand. I'd be digging to China.
That's a lot of work.
It can be backbreaking, but the little ones are coming up pretty easily. Yeah. I tell you what, the hardest one that I've had so far, except for that big one, it was just too big, was a mountain laurel.
Really?
Yes. That thing.
And like it was a sizable one, or that it was spread about, out so much?
No, it was about 2 inches in diameter.
Dang.
Yes. I thought I could pull it right up, cut it off, and knew. Mm-mm. And I've heard of people on rappelling on search and rescues using mountain laurel as their anchor.
Good gravy, man.
They take two or three good sizable mountain laurel sets, and then they wrap their rope around it, and that's what they repel off. And I can see that now. After pulling that thing up, I can see.
Right. No doubt.
Yeah, it was tough. But yeah, that's my big project right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a big one.
That is a big one.
That's hard work.
Ready back at you?
Next.
What are you currently studying that deals with outdoors, what are you studying? Because you're always studying.
Man, there's always something. I've got three projects that are related to the outdoors that are personal to me. One is that I have to finalize a project to become a certified master naturalist with the University of Kentucky. I'm already a certified master naturalist with a different organization, but I wanted to get it through the University of Kentucky as well. The final project is what I wanted to do was try to bridge the gap between the outdoors and people that sit on their couch. And so I went to a local park here in Winchester, and I have done a study and a listing of all the trees in that particular park because I happen to love trees. I'm developing a PowerPoint presentation as well as handouts that are going to be passed out at that local park for people to go around and read about the trees. So I've got the pictures of the bark, of the leaves of each one. I've got fun facts about each tree that's there. I've got fun facts about when that tree was planted, or some of the trees when they were planted, like when the college was built there, trying to share that to bridge a gap. Project number two, and it just kind of happened rather organically this year, is that Jennifer and my wife and I have been heavy into mushrooms this year just because it's just been so wet that we've seen a lot. So we've been doing a lot on edible mushrooms. We actually made a video this week showing the difference between chanterelles and jack-o'-lantern mushrooms. Last week, I saw three people post about the chanterelles that they found, and they actually found jack-o'-lanterns, which are poisonous, and it scared the crap out of me. So I thought, man, I've got to do something. So I made a video on that. I put it in our Foraging for Fun class on Outdoor Core. Took some photos that we'll be sharing in a blog soon. And real personal to me is I've had a lot of, like a lot of people, different things been happening in my life where there's been a lot of stress. And so I went back to what I love, which is tracking. I have spent some time tracking probably 6 days a week, at least an hour each day over the last several weeks, just to get my head out of some of the things that have caused me stress. Because, hey, I talk about, I preach about, I write about how valuable nature is to helping us when we need it. And so I'm just listening to my own advice and just not doing that, not trying to help other people, but actually just trying to help myself. And I love tracking so much that I've just, you know, I tracked a fawn this week. That was pretty cool for about 200, maybe 250 meters through the woods and end up coming right up on it.
Yeah. I was going to ask you this, don't mean to interrupt you, but you and I talk all the time and you'll say, I was out tracking at the farm or out doing some tracking or practicing tracking. Inform the audience. Whenever you leave your house and go to this particular place that you go all the time, mm-hmm. To track, what do you do?
That's a good question. Several different things. Sometimes it's nothing more because I might not. Well, let's talk about a couple of ways. First off, I'm trying to use it at the same time to get back to a regular exercise. So over the past 2 weeks in particular, what I've used it for is I've just been rucking with a pack. And every time I come across sign, I note it and then I'll follow it for a while, whether it goes up, down, around. And that gives me a course to follow. That way it's not, I don't take the easy road. I go wherever that critter went. So sometimes that's trailing, what's typically referred to as trailing, or I'm actually tracking an animal. Sometimes I'm just not feeling it, but I know it's important. So I'll just go out and find some tracks and sit my butt down on the ground and literally sketch, draw what it is that I'm seeing, take measurements, investigate on a real micro level. Like I might look at a deer track and I'll pick it apart, literally just look at it. One of the practices that we do in Scout Tracker class is we'll have somebody sit down on the ground and pick apart sign, and they have to find 20 things about that particular piece of sign, whether it's a track or an impression on the ground or whatever. Sometimes when I'm not feeling it, or my legs are hurting, my hips hurting, my back's hurting or something, and I can't ruck, then I'll do it that way. So it's a whole lot of that. Yeah.
Good deal.
All right. You ready?
Yep.
So we mentioned earlier, everybody, that we've been starting this Zoom classes. Right now they're $5. What is the next Zoom class you're going to do? Because we haven't talked about this yet. Do you know? Have you picked out which one you want to do?
Yeah. We did a little poll on our Facebook page, community page. And at the top of it was Gaia, which is the navigation mm-hmm. app that, if you ask me which app to get, I'm going to tell you Gaia because it's seems to be the best. I love it. So
hey, let me interject something right here mm-hmm. real quick. for everybody that's watching on YouTube, what we'll do is we keep mentioning, I'm trying to take some notes. We keep mentioning things that you probably want to link to. So I'll put links in the description of the video. So I'm writing down Gaia. So they have that. Cause everybody that follows Nature Reliance School has a 25% discount. So we'll give you that discount. Go ahead. Sorry.
Absolutely. So I think what I'm going to do, there's a couple of arches here in my county, real close to where I live. I had no clue they were there until I ran across them on one of the hiking pages, and it had the coordinates to them. Some lady had posted the coordinates, and I took those coordinates, went out and found them. And I thought that what I would do was start from scratch and take those coordinates, put them in the guide, go out, record the track, record my thought process on how I went about finding them. And then,
that's awesome.
Also take a printed map, maybe use the printed map and show some, topo features out there on how to always know where you are, you know, how to keep track of where you're going. The best way to not get lost is always know where you are, type deal. So I think that's what I'm going to be working on. I hope to have it done in about 3 weeks. If I can get out there and mesh everything together, but implementing the Gaia and the paper maps together, because I'm a big proponent of not just Gaia, but always take a paper map. And right. I promote caltopo.com. It's free and it's easy to use. And then we'll probably do another CalTopo class out there as well.
Probably need to get that one scheduled.
Yeah.
I mean, the other CalTopo, because if we get that CalTopo, then those people are probably interested in Gaia too.
Implement them out. But we need to get just a kind of a Gaia introduction started out there. And then I'd like to follow it right back up with a Zoom class on implementing it on a hike, how to use it. Or how I use it.
Good.
Several different ways to do it. Cool.
Sounds good. Yeah, man. Lay it on me.
Let's see.
Give me a hard one.
Oh, you want a hard one? All right.
Well, hang on. You've been easy.
You want a thought provoking one?
Yeah, that sounds good.
All right.
As long as it's not too hard.
It's early in the morning, isn't it? Yeah. Okay, here's one. I was thinking about this the other day. Yes or no? This is a 2-part question. Yes or no? Do you think we learn by our failures?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. If so, why do we dread failure in what we do?
We'll be back after a quick break.
Hey, guys and gals, a quick break in our episode to talk about a game changer in outdoor cooking, the Fire Maple Backpacking and Camping Stove System. Whether you're hiking, fishing, or even prepping for emergencies, this portable pot and jet burner is a must-have in your gear. Best part? It's nearly half the price of a comparable jet boil stove system. Thanks to its leading heat exchange technology, you'll experience reduced boiling times by up to 30% compared to traditional stoves, even in windy conditions. That means more time enjoying the outdoors and less time cooking. Are you ready to upgrade your outdoor cooking game? Click the link in the description now to grab yours. Trust me, your outdoor adventures will never be the same.
Ooh, man, that's a multi-part answer from me too.
Okay.
First off, I think here in this country, and we can go down a rabbit hole here really quick, but we tend to, in our educational system in this country, focus on negative reinforcement, not positive reinforcement. Not saying that teachers are bad at all, not that at all. Individual teachers are salty, they're people, but it just seems the way that we've built our system is that when you get a test that has 100 questions on it and you miss two, you're always focused on the two. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't focus on the two, but you should also at some point in time focus on the fact that you got 98 correct. We tend to, from a very early age, have a lot of attention focused on the things that we did wrong. That is, in my mind, the famous quote that, and I can't even remember who said this, maybe, heck, I don't know where I got it, but anyway, failing does not make you a failure. There's a big difference. Failing is just part of the process. Why we feel that way, I think, again, goes back to that educational system early on. Secondly, it's ego. And we have a big tendency to have a problem with being able to control our own egos. And the ego is what gets in the way and says that when we make a mistake in front of other people that we screwed up or whatever, and they look down upon us. And we could really quickly get guilty of doing that right here, Tracy. And that's one of the reasons we want to do these live discussions, is because, well, recorded discussions that go such that we're not going to edit this. This is it. This is the way it's going to happen. And I think it's important to grasp that ego is something that you and I and we all around us need to get control of. Recognize that it's there. Just be in control of it. Don't let your ego guide you, because your ego almost gotten me killed twice. And as it relates to the outdoors, secondly, it just makes you not have good critical decision-making skills. And so I think that getting in control of the ego is a big thing.
Yeah, I agree. Whenever you said teachers, that reminded me of a story. My wife's a teacher, so it popped up on my screen, or she might have been the one who showed it to me. But this teacher was in class, and she was running down through a list of information, and she purposely said one wrong, gave the wrong information.
Right.
Immediately, the student said, "You're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong," just jumped on it. And she turned around and asked, and she said, "Why are you focusing on the one wrong and not the nine right?"
Right.
So, but yeah, some of my greatest learning episodes in life has been through failures.
Yeah. I mean, it's for those that follow what I do as far as a writer, which I've never considered myself a writer, and I don't to this day. I just know that I'm getting paid to write quite a bit. So I guess I am, whether I want to admit to it or not. But yeah. When I was a sophomore in college, I took a business writing course. The instructor was just hardcore. I mean, this is where we learned to put memorandums together. This is where we learned to write resumes. This is where we learned to write sales pitches. And I have a degree in statistics, so I have a lot of extra courses that were built there to help build me as a, you know, having a degree in business. I remember the first, I'll never forget, because I felt, you know, I was an honor student in high school and did okay with my general ed courses. My first year of school, my engineering courses, I flunked. That's why I'm not an engineer now. But, and I went into business. I got that first test back and I got a 27 out of 100 on my first letter. And it was just red. But the way he approached it was so different. It wasn't, he was really big on, "Craig, you have an opportunity to take this document from something that is not going to do what you want it to do to something that you want it to do. And I'm going to help you do that." It wasn't, "Hey, you're a dip switch. You made this many mistakes." It was, "Look at all these opportunities you have to become a better writer." That really affected me deeply, because it didn't stop at the first one. It was like that the whole semester for all of us. There were people in that class that were straight A students in everything they'd ever done in class. I remember one girl sitting next to me literally crying in class because she had never received anything like that before. And I'm sure some of the stuff he was doing was subjective. He was just a great teacher, and he knew how to push people to become better. And he used our failures to help us become much better at what we were doing. And he put me on the path of writing, no doubt about it. Without no doubt about it.
Oh, really? Yeah. One of the things that you taught me early on, especially whenever I kind of stepped in and helped teach at the martial arts, you said, "Praise, correct, praise." You remember that? Yeah.
PCP.
Yep.
Yeah. That's good. I mean, everybody has a different approach, but I like to, whenever I'm going to correct somebody on something, is praise them for something they've done right, and then correct them, and then praise them again at the end. You know, it's a proven fact. When we're looking at information, if we're reading a book, if we're looking at a sign as we're driving down the road, we typically will see the first thing that we see, and then we'll be able to recall easily the things that we saw first and the things that we saw last. And I really have not studied that in depth enough to understand why that is. But so it doesn't mean that people won't remember the correction. It's just because some people have egos that get damaged easily. I usually do PCP. Now, there's other times in classes, you know, if it's a military law enforcement class, those guys have got to get the information. They got to get it now. And yeah. So it's a little bit different approach. I'm not saying that a drill sergeant should do that. But for me, working with the typical average ordinary American trying to learn something new in the outdoors, I tend to take that approach. I did in martial arts, obviously. You did too. You do it now. You do it now. And when you're teaching all the time, it's, I think it's good.
Yeah. I think it sets a good tone. It sets students at ease. If you can say, "No, you're doing good. You're doing good. Look, You got, you got all the right materials to build the fire. Let's just dig in a little bit deeper and figure out why they're not working, you know, type deal. But I think that approach works. And I try to use it even whenever I'm outside of Nature Alliance School and, you know, in my home life and everything else.
Yeah. Sure.
Praise, correct, and praise. You do.
Hey, man, I got a question for you that we haven't talked. I don't think we've talked about this on a podcast. And this doesn't, I wish this would come up more often in regular classes too. But for those that are watching and listening, Tracy has in his lifetime spent a great deal of time horse riding. So what a trail riding. So one of the questions I had for you, Trace, is, what kind of things did you do doing that sort of activity in the outdoors that's different from, let's say, just hiking, for example?
Well, so my horse riding experience kind of came in waves, I guess. Growing up, we had waves back home, around home. There would become several months or maybe even a year where people would want to do the four-wheeling, and then seemed like everybody transitioned from four-wheeling back to horses, and then it'd go from horses back to four, you know. So it came in waves. Whenever I was younger, we would horse ride, you know, day ride a few hours, or sometimes we'd go camping. The best horse camping trip that I can remember, I was probably 13 or 14, and I bet, Craig, there was 35 horses that left out. We had so many people that went that I actually had to ride on behind someone, switch between my dad and a brother. But it was a sight to see. Guns everywhere, pack
America,
horses.
America, baby.
Yeah, pack horses. But we stayed out. We left our house, and it took us 2 days. Two nights we camped out. On the third day, we got to our campsite.
Dang.
We stayed there for 3 or 4 days, and then we rode back.
You remember how far that is? Because that's a long way.
I would have to measure it out, but it was a long ways.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of people. Saddlebags was loaded. I'm trying to think. I think a few people did take tents, but most people just took some tarps and and the old Coleman sleeping bags, if you remember those, you know, that you got. Saddlebags were loaded, absolutely loaded. Whenever you go out like that, it's not just food and water for yourself, but when you're planning, you got to think about the horses. And we were out in dead summer, so it was hot.
Golly, man.
Now, fortunately, where we were riding, we crossed creeks all the time, so the water for the horses was no big issues. And back then, you know, we probably shouldn't have done it, but I'd jump off the horse and get out in the creek and drink right out of the creek. You know, I wouldn't dare do that now. But you got to think about the feed for the horse. You know, horse is going to eat a lot more than what we do. So whenever you come across a field, you might take 10, 15 minutes and let the horse graze, you know, along. But a lot of people took bags of sweet feed, which is high in nutrition. Some people took alfalfa blocks that they could water, and because those are very high in nutrition. And then when you stake the horse out, you might stake them out to where there's some grass and, you know, let them eat. And after you got through eating late in the evening, you might lead the horse up to a field and let them graze for, you know, an hour or something. You got to take care of your mount.
Right.
The place we went, I think it was the day before we left, one of our family members brought a truck up and brought some supplies to us for a ride back. It was close enough to where we could. Took a couple of horses up and brought everything down.
Nice.
But yeah, it goes beyond just thinking about yourself or thinking about your fellow hikers or riders. You got to think about the mounts and taking care of them and having them properly fed and watered, and then give them some breaks. Horses rode almost daily or every day or several times a week. Then they can take a lot of heat and they can take a lot of riding, but some of the horses in the group were soft. So, you know, you had to, just like hiking, you know, you got to kind of watch the other members of your hiking group and go as fast as the slowest person. But we'd have to take little breaks and let the softer horses catch up and rest and everything.
That's something I haven't done much of. So I was interested to ask you that for everyone, for my sake and for everybody's
sake.
I
love it. And just whenever I was young, my family members, they rode horses and they were more interested in speed riding, racking, which is a gait. My dad had a blue roan that they clocked on the asphalt via car going 32 mile an hour, racking 32 mile an hour.
Gravy.
And I didn't have a lot of interest in that. Whenever I was on a horse, I wanted to more or less flat foot. I wanted to look and see, and I didn't know why, but that's the way I am now. Whenever I'm hiking, I want to look and see, and you know,
right.
So in my later years, when everybody kind of slowed down, got some age, and now we kind of go out and flat foot and, you know, not worry about covering 25 miles in one day. We may do 7 or 8 miles. Mm. We take our time flat foot and walk and enjoy and see things. You know, if we're going along, we may jump off and tie up and walk up and take a look at the cliff. Now, where whenever I was a young kid, man, they wouldn't do that.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody was
got to keep going
as fast as they could go.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. But I haven't ridden. It's been probably, I don't know, 4 years or so since I've ridden.
Oh, really? Yeah. Not at all.
I still got my mare. My niece, my great niece, I guess now, they're starting to ride her. She's real calm and gentle. And we've kind of passed her on to a family horse. So,
yeah.
A good, gotcha. Calm horse is worth its weight in gold.
Right.
Kid. So she's still serving the family pretty good.
Yeah. That's good. That's yeah. Real good.
Back to you, man.
All right, dude.
All right, let me get one down here.
Lay it on me. Yeah.
Okay. So what do you think people are missing whenever they are out in nature, whenever they go, people that's going out in hikes, camps, what do you think they're missing out there?
Boy, that's a big question too. I mean, you got some good questions today. I think, well, let's talk about, I'm getting ready to do PCP right now. I didn't even thought about it. I'm getting ready to do it right now. I think the fact that people really like to go outside is really good.
There's the praise.
I think getting outside, I think everybody knows is a good thing. And I think people that are engaging and going outdoors is really good. I think one of the things that comes up that's missing is the actual micro level of nature, I guess, for lack of a better way of saying, I don't really know how to say it, is that you can go hiking, but and if you're moving quickly, if you're riding horses quickly, you just miss so much. And I've told this story a million times because it just illustrates a point, but I remember I was going to take my daughter out when she was real little. And there was a pond, there was a wildlife pond out in the middle of Daniel Boone National Forest. And I knew that that time of year it had a lot of the, what's the name of those little salamanders, the little orange ones? Are they newts or salamanders? Can't remember, but they usually birth themselves in wildlife ponds out in the middle of the forest or waterways and what have you. And I knew that this pond always had them in it this time of year. And I was going to take her to this pond. So we parked the car on the side of the road, got ready to go. And my daughter got out of the car and got infatuated with an anthill right next to the car, right where it's parked. You know, I was getting all my packs and all my stuff ready and water bottles for everybody and all that good stuff. And I'm like, come on, we got to go. And she's like, no, but look, you know, she's probably 4 or 5 years old or something. Look at this anthill right here. And I'm like, well, come on, we got to go. We got to go look at these, you know, I want it to be a surprise. I wanted to take her. I mean, I could still see this trail. It's still there. Take her around the corner of this trail, because when you turn and look, there's the pond, and it would have been full of these things. It always was. And come on, you know, and she just did not want to leave that anthill. And then it just hit me, man. It hurt me too, actually, because it was a good lesson for me. I brought her to show her nature. She's infatuated with nature right here with these anthills. You know, it's definitely goes back to, it's a journey, not a destination, right? And I think people in general, in tracking, I try to tell people all the time, just on a regular basis, you come up with the own number of steps that work for you or the own time frame. Every 5 minutes, stop and go, what am I missing? And just stop and look. And I can guarantee you, anybody that's listening or watching, if you're on a hike trip and every so often, if it's a long trip, every 30 minutes, just stop, catch your breath, ask yourself, what am I missing? And look around. You will see something that you were getting ready to walk by that's rather interesting, amazing, or some variation of it. That is one of the best ways that I have come to find that I have seen owls on a regular basis in the outdoors. On a regular basis, if I get a feeling that somebody's watching me, that weird feeling that something's going on, I will stop and look around, and that is where I see my owls. And I see owls all the time now. And it's because of, you know, normally I'd have just busted on by them, but what am I missing? The other one that I think, and this is more of a practical answer, is people typically go to the outdoors and they don't take the requisite gear that they need to spend an uncomfortable night outside. You know, we see it a lot, and I've sit and listened to you over and over and over talk about these people that get lost in the Red River Gorge, for example. They go out with tank top and shorts and flip-flops on. I think every person needs to go into the outdoors with the mindset that, hey, I may have to spend the night outside. And if I do, what kind of things would I want to have in my day pack that can keep me alive? Maybe not perfectly comfortable. I'm not saying you have to take the sleeping bag and the tent and the hammock and all that stuff, but what kind of things would serve you well? Obviously water, you know, a knife, some sort of tarp or garbage bag or something, you know, some of the requisite, we've talked about this a million times, but so that information is out there. Those requisite things that everybody should carry into the outdoors, I think that's one of the big things that they're missing.
Do you think it's valuable for people to go out by themselves into the woods?
Yes. Why? Absolutely invaluable. For me, my faith taught me that, you know, I'm a follower of Christ. So Christ taught me throughout scripture, he just remove himself from the crowds and de-stress. Now, sometimes, I mean, how do we know what he did when he was there? We don't really know, but for certain, that was an example that really struck me early on. Obviously, I love the outdoors, so that kind of struck me and I tied myself to it. I know from experience that there's a time for us to go out and just listen, get out of our own heads. It's valuable to de-stressing yourself. We all have, Tracy has, I have, you have, we all have stresses. And we've got a blog on the website that's got like 75 links on it now. Every time I come across an article that has scientific evidence that proves that being in nature is good for us, I put it in that blog. There's just too much information that proves that it's valuable. So getting out alone is incredibly valuable because you don't have any more outside influences on you other than nature. And I think that's incredibly valuable, and science proves that. However, there's a caveat to saying that. Make sure somebody knows where you're going and when they should expect you home and who you're going with or what areas you're going to or whose farm or what part of the Daniel Boone National Forest or wherever it is that you live and go, and make sure they know those things. Don't purposely go off grid and try to hide for the sake of the betterment of yourself. There's times to do that sort of training. I'm not saying there's not. I'm going to do some more of that moving forward, but I think getting out in nature obviously is incredibly valuable by yourself.
One of the, a book that has made a lasting impression on me was the book, What the Robin Knows. Mm-hmm. I think you were the one who was telling me about that, but,
probably
throughout that book, he kept talking about the, you know, find yourself a sit spot. Mm-hmm. And I still do that to this day. I've got about 20 acres of woods here around the house, and I've got two that I go to all the time, and I'm going to be building another couple that just go out and sit. We were having class one time, and students weren't scheduled to be there for a couple hours, so I grabbed a pad and just went out at the Girl Scout camp that we used to teach at, leaned up against a tree and just sat there. And I probably wasn't there 30 minutes, maybe 40 max, and here come a couple deer, a little fawn with mommy deer coming over the little bank. And that little fawn walked within probably 8 feet of me,
right,
before it recognized, you know, you just don't get that by walking through the woods. You know, we disturb so much with our movement and noise that's out in front of us and around us.
John Young, Tracy, is the guy that wrote that book. And John Young wrote this in that book or another one. I've read a bunch of his stuff. And that Master Naturalist certification I mentioned earlier, it was through his school that I got that. One of the ways that he describes, I love this analogy. When you go into the wilderness, it's like taking a rock and throwing it into a pond. Yeah. And you have these ripple effect that come out from your position. And that's you and me. And when we go out there, we have this. And if we're consistently in movement, that ripple effect is affecting the nature that's around us all the way out from us. And so when we go out there and sit down, those ripples start to come back and slow down. And I'm writing that book down so they know how to get that book.
Yeah.
That's a good
one. I got the title right, didn't I?
What the Robin Knows by John Young.
Yeah. It's well worth the read. It's easy read and it's well worth it.
I got one more question for you, dude.
Okay. I was going to say, was it my turn or your turn?
But how long have we been going?
I don't know. We probably about 40 minutes or so.
Okay. What is the craziest thing that you can remember from an NRS class?
That'll
be a hard one.
Craziest thing.
And don't ask me, because I don't think I could come up with an answer. No. I swear I don't. There's too many, man.
I mean, aside from the raccoons playing underneath and disturbing everything, do you remember? I know you do.
I wrote an article this week about those raccoons, man. It's funny that you brought that up.
There's a scout tracker class out at the farm. We had a couple events going simultaneously, right?
Right.
So one of your students that was in class walked out into the woods to take a relief to pee
break. Yeah, I know exactly what you're going to say.
Almost peed on another student that was in a hide. I mean, within a couple feet of him.
Right.
Finished his business and walked back to class and had no clue that that person was out there.
Yeah, he had no idea, man.
The guy came to me. We had radios with us, and he's like, hey, man, I almost got peed on.
Oh, man, that's a good scout sniper practice right there.
Oh, yeah, but some of the scout tracking classes where we had a couple scenarios going at the same time, and they were some good close encounters there that no one knew that was going on.
I tell people all the time, man, I'd love to have you all join us in any class you want to come to, but if you want to just change your life forever, then come to a scout tracker class, because I don't know how to explain it, man. Tracking and camouflaging, I really don't. I've tried to put it into words, and I'm at a loss for words for how eye-opening something like a scout tracker class is.
You know, for me, I don't know if it was the camouflage portion of it as much as it was the tracking portion, because the tracking portion opened my eyes up to a lot of things that were there that I just didn't see it.
Mm-hmm. You know, Mike Cole, Mike Cole, who's trained both Tracy and I, is a really good tracker, holds tracking school down in Virginia. He's fond of saying that tracking is the oldest newspaper in the world, because it tells a story. You just got to learn how to read it. And I love that quote. It's a really good quote. It's so true, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But I think the tracking portion hit me more than the camouflage. The camouflage is cool, being able to, you know, slide in or hide or that kind of stuff. But the tracking portion really opened my eyes up to slowing down, seeing and looking and seeing stuff. I had been on a fairly good push here around the house of just learning all the weeds around my house, plants. I found wineberry the other day, by the way.
I don't even know what that is, dude.
I didn't either until I found it.
Is it an edible berry?
It is an edible berry, yes.
It's not the little tiny blueberries you find in the gorge.
No.
Something different?
Yeah, something different. These are more in line with red raspberries.
Really?
Tasty. Very tasty.
Like a congregate berry? Sorry,
yep.
I'm...
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. I'll send you pictures of it. Off track, I'm sorry. But I was walking through my property, and I used that app Seek to help me to get me started on something. But just walking through there, I found two pink lady slippers that was growing,
right?
That I probably would not have seen, bypassed them and went right on if it wasn't for tracking and trying to improve my knowledge and studying and slowing down and looking and analyzing the landscape and stuff. So,
this past week, Jennifer and I were out doing that video I was mentioned earlier on chanterelles and jack-o'-lanterns, and we come around on ATV and I buried it. I mean, I got it stuck up on a log, and I mean, it was like, crap, I'm gonna have to get the tractor to get this thing. It was bad, man. It was really bad. But there was a track line that went down the hill right below where the ATV got stuck. Couldn't resist, so I started walking down through there, and I mean, just all of a sudden, boom, there's a lion's mane mushroom that I don't hardly ever find that was on the back side of the tree, and I wouldn't have seen it normally because I'd usually gone through this particular area. And it was an old one. It wasn't edible anymore, but it'll come back this winter. So now, just because I got to fall on a track line, well, I'll have another place to pick up some lion's mane mushroom. So It's just, yeah. It's just an incredible practice, man. I mean, it's just, I wish everybody would become a tracker. We would lose all through hikers though, which is a valuable practice. I know there's nothing wrong with through hiking, but there's no way I could do it ever again. There's no way I can through hike anything in my life. I'm like a squirrel. I get off on something else.
In my 30s, I would go out and I would somewhat, gauge my hiking experience by the number of miles that I covered for the day.
You think this is a thing of age, for real? You think age kind of makes us have that drift towards this kind of mindset, or is it getting older and hopefully wiser? I would hope.
Yeah. Two things. One, I think you just call me old, but two,
you are older than me. It's true.
I think it does have something to do with it. You get a little bit more wiser. You get a little bit more. I don't know. It seemed like the older I've gotten, the more focused I've been on learning. If that makes sense.
Oh yeah.
I look at the young kids today and I'm sure I was exactly the same way whenever I was a teenager, but there doesn't seem to be a big push for learning. I'm sure my dad said, "Hey, here's how you do something." In my mind, I was saying, I know this, I got this, I don't worry, you know.
Right.
But the older I get, I have noticed the more that I want to learn. So yes, I think there is something slowing down. But back to the hiking, if I go out and hike 3 miles, 4 miles, that's a big hike for me anymore, seems like, because I always want to stop and verify that I know this plan, or looking for a rock formation, or, you know, identify that, what is that tree? That doesn't look right, you know, and then try to go from there. So yeah, I think so. One last question.
Okay.
Yes. Kind of ties into the previous question. Nature Reliance School, and you teach a lot of different classes, tracking, navigation, safety, survival, hunting, situation awareness, nature immersion, tree, plant, IDUs, primitive skills. Did I miss any? What is your favorite and why? And I'll give you my answer after you answer, and I bet you won't get it.
My favorite to teach.
Yeah. What is your favorite class?
Scout Tracker, without a doubt.
Okay.
I have a lot of thorough and an increasing amount of enjoyment teaching everything that I am fortunate enough to be able to teach. Don't want anybody that comes to class to think that, hey, Craig's not really enjoying himself. I am. But like, for example, in a survival class, I've got to gather a bunch of stuff together to adequately teach that course, just so people can get a good look at different pieces of gear and stuff. Scout tracking, I don't need crap to teach that class. I can right now walk in. I got one scheduled this week where I'm going to be in the woods for a week with people teaching them tracking. And I'm like, I can't wait, because all I have to do is take myself and show up and I can start teaching, and I'll be good. I'll be good for 50 hours that week. And now, the safety and survival aspect of survival and land navigation, which I think are absolutely necessary to be able to have a really good in-depth entrance into the wilderness and to stay safe. That's why we teach them, because we love teaching them, because it helps people get out there and they're safer and they can do it more and more and more. I love that. But more light bulbs come on for me teaching Scout Tracker than anything else. It's just such a foreign It is a totally foreign way of doing things. So, you know, the deck is stacked on my side for light bulbs for people, obviously. And I love seeing people go, "Oh my gosh, I had no idea you could tell that by a track." So, yeah, that would be my answer.
That would have been my answer up until your class, and only got to take only got to take half of it. Your nature immersion class.
Oh, really? Really?
Yeah.
Nature immersion more so than tracking. Huh, okay. Yeah.
And it may just because it's new.
Yeah.
But it opened my eyes up to nature well beyond just my immediate surroundings.
Right.
And I thought that was really neat. But yeah, I'm looking forward to taking your immersion immersion class. So
that's
but if I had to recommend. If I had to recommend three classes to people, it would be take the safety and survival class.
Yeah.
Take the land navigation class, and then take the scout tracking class.
Yeah. In that order.
In that order. Absolutely. Yeah,
without a doubt. for those that are new to the outdoors, you brand spanking new, you will learn a lot in Scout Tracker, but you know, we're going to have you buried in the leaves too. And you're going to have leaves in your ears and dirty, and you'll have bugs crawling on you. If that doesn't sound like something you want to do, then it's probably not for you.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm all about Nature Blind School's always been about, Tracy's been about getting people outdoors safely. And so Survival Level 1 is by far our most popular class. And whether you train with us or you train with somebody else or you train on your own, just train. Because the goal for us is to encourage you to get outside. We'd love to help you. We'd love to teach you to do that. But we want you to get outside and spend more time, as we've kind of found out some of the reasoning why today. Survival Level 1 is probably a good way to do that.
It is. Craig, I think that's pushing us up just under an hour. When we sat down, when we were putting this together, we thought, well, let's try to do 30 minutes.
That's the way it always is, man.
So I'd say we're at our limit. Yeah, absolutely. We'll do another one pretty soon. So if you want to go ahead and close us out, okay. I'll say thank you to all that's watching and for those on the podcast for listening. So we appreciate your support.
Hey, guys and gals. Yeah, we really do appreciate it. And we do what we do for you. So let us know what kind of things you like. If this is some we talked about earlier, this could be one of mine and Tracy's failures. We might find that, hey, this is not something you like to do. You want some different aspect to it. Then please let us know. I mean, we're here to serve you as best we can. And so anything that you can offer in the way of encouragement is always greatly appreciated, but also criticism. Throw it at us. We cannot get better if we don't know what it is that you want us to do. So we'll take what expertise that we have and what love and humility that we have for what it is that we share with people and make sure that it's integrated with what our listeners want to see and hear. So with that said, thanks for everything. Appreciate you. Check us out at naturereliance.org. We've got a Facebook group on Facebook called Nature Reliance School Community. If that interests you, follow us on Instagram, all that cool stuff. As always, come on, join in. Let's learn together.
And that wraps up another fantastic episode of the Nature Blinds podcast. I hope today's journey has inspired you to explore and connect with the natural world in new and exciting ways. Before I say goodbye, remember to check out the Nature Blinds School online membership. If today's episode sparked your interest in wilderness skills and outdoor adventures, this online community is the perfect place for you to start or continue your journey. You can currently sign up for a year for only $99 and get 2 months for free. Click the link below to discover a world of expert-led courses, engaging content, and a vibrant community eager to share their knowledge and experiences. Whether you're starting your outdoor journey or looking to deepen your existing skills, the Nature Reliance School online membership is here to guide you. Thank you for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe for more adventures and share this podcast with your fellow nature enthusiasts. Until next time, come on, join in. Let's learn together.